newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smith.
Hey, this is The Media Project. I am not Rex Smith. I'm Judy Patrick.
Yay.
I'm filling in for Rex this week for The Media Project. I'm here today with Barb Lombardo. She is an adjunct professor at UAlbany, and she's the former editor at the Saratoga and the Troy Record. Also with us, David Gustina, the esteemed producer of this program and jack of all trades here at WAMC. So, Barb, what do you want to talk about today?
Oh, so many things to choose from. I think we definitely need to talk about the news coverage of the shooting in Minneapolis by a nice person.
Good point. And Dave?
I'm interested in the anniversary of January 6th and the idea of truth and how we're losing so much of it and what that means, what that portends for a lot of the stories and issues we'll talk about today.
Well, that's going to be a depressing conversation then. But let's start first with some really big stories the media had to cover this week, both the Venezuelan, the abduction of Maduro from Venezuela, and the Minnesota case in which the ICE agent shot.
Wasn't it a law enforcement?
So how did the media handle this? Did they do a good job? Was it fact-based? Was it sensational? Barb, how did you think Venezuela went?
Oh, boy. I think that under the circumstances that the media, the mainstream media that I was looking at, did a pretty fair job of trying to make sense out of something that was 99% unexpected, because we can also talk a little bit about the heads up that some major outlets received before the event. I like that you said, what about his abduction? Because all of that is a choice of tone and attitude and words, like, was he abducted? Was he kidnapped? Was he arrested? It depends on your point of view of what's going on, and it's a very complicated and weird subject. I think the media's done a pretty good job with it.
There's so many issues wrapped up in this situation, including the fact that the Pentagon recently issued a policy we talked about that removed a lot of the more mainstream truth-telling journalists from inside the Pentagon. So then you have to push that forward now into an event like this, where they're going to have those reporters they kept there that are going to follow the policy of the Pentagon, spit out those words they want, and you're then left even more unsure of what really happened.
You know, and it showed the value of a seasoned Pentagon press corps in the hours following what happened, because they were asking really intricate expertise kind of level questions that the average reporter, the ones that are installed there now, the people from Newsmax and those other right-wing outlets, aren't going to have that kind of expertise. Although, you know, what I thought in the first 12, 24 hours, there's way too much focus on the military operation and not enough focus on, well, what are we going to do now that we've done this to Venezuela? I mean, I think efforts were made by reporters to ask those questions. They weren't getting a lot of answers, but that doesn't mean that story shouldn't have been fleshed out far
more.
Well,
there was some regurgitation of the position that, oh, we're getting rid of this terrible drug dealer. And as the minutes would go by, the reasoning for it would become quite different. And what's supposed to happen next was revealed to be a little scary and a little uncertain.
And when do you report an action like this? You know, is it a war? Isn't it a war? Where does this fall? And as we learned this week, I believe it was the Times and the Post kind of held it until, because they're always worried. The Pentagon's always going to come to your newspaper, your media organization, say, don't put the troops in danger. But there are other people that were killed in this operation, and they were in danger. And where does the press role here? Are we rah, 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 go American soldier, do your duty? Or do we have to look at it from a much more unbiased point of view? The idea that we are engaged in an act which could be interpreted as war, don't we need to go to the Congress for that approval? Those questions were all asked and discussed this week and have been going around. But again, you see this issue of when do you publish that this action is going on.
You know, Secretary of State Marco Rubio even confirmed that the news of this action, law enforcement action, had been leaked to some media organizations ahead of time. Also,
leaked on purpose.
And then also, apparently, the president talked to some oil companies about it ahead of time as well. But apparently, they did not talk to the congressional.
Because they didn't trust the congressional folks not to leak it.
So it's a good sign that all of that was reported.
Right, eventually. Yeah. But apparently this operation was authorized, but then the weather didn't allow them to go to activate it for several days. And the news media did sit on this. And so the question is, does the media have an obligation to report an impending action if it views it as illegal? Is it up to the news media to make that determination? It's really a slippery slope here.
It is a difficult question, and I've tried to put myself in the shoes of the editors of those publications and the owners of those publications. And boy, we've had much smaller scale issues like that at the Saratogian over the years, where there might be some big police drug bust about to go down with state police and local police, and they give you a heads up because they want to make sure the publicity is out. And from the newspaper's perspective, you're getting the ability to be prepared so that when it does happen, you could be first and most complete with the report. So that's the tease for the media outlet, that you want to be first and have a good report on some news so you sit on it. But oh my God, I wished I wouldn't have known if I was in their shoes. You almost don't want to know about it. So it seems wrong to hold it, and yet you're in the position of what's your obligation as a human being and a citizen to hold. What would you do, Judy?
Yeah, it is a tough national security concerns are real, and putting American service people in harm's way is a real concern for us. We want to limit the amount of harm we do. You need to talk to the people who know about national security, and you need to be suspect as well. What would you do, Dave?
Well, it's a very tough situation when you're talking about police. With Barb, I've always been counseled in journalism school and in my career, you don't just fully cooperate with the police. The police have an agenda, certainly, and they are going to organize their investigations in such a way to minimize the information that you get. And so by taking handouts all the time and doing exactly what they say, I would say is wrong. But you have to weigh it case by case by case. In this case, it's very difficult when the head of the Department of Defense, or war, depending on how you want it, comes and says you're going to be hurting soldiers if you put this information out there. That's a pretty heady decision to make. And I might err on the side of caution. I wasn't put in that position. The other part of this is we don't hear information, like I read this morning, finally, that one of the bombs or explosives that was dropped hit an apartment complex and a woman in her 80s was killed. So there's a civilian that was killed in this already that we now know about, but we wouldn't have known about that if it were for the officialdom that spoke on the matter.
Right. In the first 24 hours, we didn't hear much, if anything at all, of casualties on the ground in Venezuela. And one of the oddest things, and I think we've gotten way too used to this, is the fact that the world learned about this with a Truth Social post by Donald Trump at 4 o'clock in the morning. We used to have more formalized announcements of major events like this. We live in unprecedented times, and to the president's credit, he did sit down with reporters from the New York Times for 2 or 3 hours. I've always lobbied that he does need to talk to real reporters, like print reporters, and for a wide-ranging interview. They tried to get more information from him about what will happen next in Venezuela. At this discussion, we haven't heard everything that they got out of that interview, and we'll see what happens. But, at least there's that amount of information. The problem with the president, and we talk about truth a lot, sometimes we can't really rely on what he says. What he will say something, and
sometimes.
then his people have to come to Sunday morning talk shows and say, no, we didn't really mean we're going to run Venezuela. We're just going to kind of leverage our authority to make them do what we want them to do.
Well, right. And then you have all the editorial boards. I love that article we had with the different editorials. And one of the only papers was the New York Times that was pointing out, there's a little bit of constitutional question here. Are we really acting in good faith? And yet, the Washington Post, this is a major victory for American interests. The idea, and this is, in my opinion, where, the publisher, the people who run the papers, they see where it's all going, and they try to play the line. You know, well, he was clearly a bad guy, so we're not unhappy that he got taken away, and this is going to be a benefit for us. But do we really know that at this early juncture?
Right. Some of the editorials were a lot of flag-waving about how great our military people are and what a great plan this was. It was months in the making, and the precision of it, and there was that kind of patriotic pride, and we did a good job to get a bad guy out. So that is true, but it's overly simplistic. I mean, there needs to be repeated mention of, what about, was it Hernandez, the guy from Honduras?
Also
drug trafficking. And
that he pardoned.
Like, right.
So is it about drugs or isn't it about drugs?
Yeah, and lots of related things about where you can go and not go. Trump's, what was he calling it,
Donroe Doctrine.
The Donroe Doctrine made me a little ill.
But that was the tabloids. You know, the tabloids love these headlines, and that was the New York Post, shock, shock, shock. And then they pick up on it. You know, that's how people remember. That's how you stick things in their mind.
He's good at that.
You give them phrases, and that works.
Hey, what about Minneapolis, where an ICE agent fired on a woman in a Honda Pilot, killing her? Still uncertain at this point about all the details of what happened, but in the early hours, has the media been responsible in terms of what they're presenting to the public and the kind of debates they're putting on the air and in their print and on the radio?
I think every time that it's mentioned, what the official views were, that you need to repeat that Kristi Noem and the president rushed to judgment, that they're saying things that are markedly not true. This was an opportunity for them to try to bring some calm to the situation and say, we're going to look into this, that it's a terrible tragedy. But instead, they labeled somebody as a domestic terrorist without any evidence of that.
See the phrase again? They are singularly focused on just continuing to barrel down the road and use these terms and not have any nuanced conversation. This is an American citizen that is now dead. And, you know, agitator, she was described as, you know, because she was protesting.
So the burden of the media is to report what the official voices are saying, and then with the comeback on it saying, but, you know, this is unproven.
Yeah, words matter.
I think that has happened. I've heard it. I've read it. Our roundtable program on WAMC talked about it, brought up all these points. Those issues are getting out there. The media has been doing a decent job on this. It's that it's sort of out of our hands once the people ingest it and decide how to respond to it.
Now, I was very pleased with the care they took in terms of vetting the video, because you heard them discuss the fact that they weren't going to put the video that they had on air until they could verify that it was true and accurate. Because in this day and age of AI, you can imagine that there are bad videos. There are videos that are not the truth that are out there. They're imaging as we speak today. I've already seen several.
Multiple
things. The same thing happened with the Maduro arrests, that quickly we saw images, some true, some not, of Maduro in custody. And so I think the New York Times did a yeoman's job of explaining how they vetted their photos and how to determine what was true and what was not. So with all of these stories, you have to pay attention to AI, and you have to just trust credible news sources when you're looking at a video, an image, and even a meme.
On CNN this morning, I thought they were doing a really good job in talking to people who are at the scene and protesters or anti-ICE people, whatever, at the scene. And when one of the people they interviewed said, Donald Trump is a Russian agent and Russian asset. And when they came back to the anchors in the newsroom, they said, there's no evidence that Trump is a Russian asset. So it was like, I say, well, yes, I thought that was a smart thing to do, so that they're giving a comeback and they're not just accepting an anti-Trump thing or a pro-Trump thing on the face of it.
And don't we need to be careful to have a fair representation? Don't we need someone who might be in support of ICE and someone who might be more nuanced in their understanding of things? We should be providing that well-rounded view, shouldn't we? As opposed to the extremes, because that just increases the temperature more.
I totally agree with you. And that's one of the reasons, like, I try to tune into right-wing media every once in a while, just so you get a sense of what your neighbors are thinking.
Yeah. You know, I really love Judy and Barbara. I really love that during the Times interview with Donald Trump on this horrific situation in Minnesota, that he referred to the video and the video being horrible, and they pulled it up and they had him watch it, and he couldn't quite say, well, it was a horrible situation all around. So even though I've seen a video that seems to show the car does bump the guy a little bit, but certainly perhaps
doesn't run him over.
It isn't running him over, and it can't necessarily be seen as intentional.
And even though he probably was sent to the hospital because as a matter of routine, you're going to want to make sure that you've taken that step.
Oh, sure. And you can say he's in the hospital.
But then I also read and saw that he just walked away from the alleged, attack.
But the truth is that even with a video that's accurate, not everybody will interpret it that way.
All right. Well, let's talk about truth, because early January, it's been 5 years since the takeover of the state capitol
or the patriotic march.
The U.S. Capitol, a mounted insurrection, really, an unsuccessful one.
Unhappy Americans who were mad at the government and thought the election was stolen. Now, this is an anniversary worth covering every year because this goes to the heart of our democracy. You still have people today, including many public officials, who believe that election was stolen, or at least say that. And that is a complete disservice to this country. It's not the truth. But if you say it enough, enough people will believe it.
Or it becomes the official voice.
As you erase all history of the other.
In our newsrooms and in our classrooms, we used to teach people to look at like .edu, .gov, as websites that are containing trustworthy, credible information. And now if you're going to go to .gov, you're seeing things that are demonstrably false and politicized on the website, including this whole situation with January 6th. There's a New York Times video that was done shortly after the event and after the insurrection called Day of Rage. And I show it to my students for multiple reasons, including showing how you can tell a story in different ways and using records and videos and putting the narratives together. But I'm choosing that one so they can see what happened that day with their own eyes. And then I ask for feedback from them. And most of them are surprised. So what did you learn from it that you didn't know about? And most of them were surprised about how orchestrated this takeover was. Attempted takeover.
Yeah, it's fascinating that we talked last week about whether or not to do anniversary stories. But I agree with you, David, that this is an important one because there's so much misinformation, disinformation about January 6th that's still out there. And when I saw the anniversary stories, I saw so many of my friends saying, all that's been debunked. That didn't really happen. This has all been overblown.
Watch Day of Rage.
Yeah, I would have thought by now that these people are not letting this go. And again, the video, we all saw it. It was such a horrific day.
I believe I saw a noose for the vice president, police officers being beaten, windows being broken, taking over politicians' offices and doing other things in their offices and on their desks. It was the worst behavior that Americans can turn toward their government. And they did it for a reason that wasn't the truth.
Right. So many of them, probably most of them, were driven by a sense of patriotism.
Correct.
And they believed what they were being told and still believe, many of them still believe what they are being told. So how do we as a media report on those things? What do you use as a source to retell this story?
Right. And let's not forget that Donald Trump pardoned all of those
people.
And so what you will see occasionally is a story about one of them being rearrested for some other crime. So I guess that's the only thing you can do. I mean, we talked about the fact that they had a plaque to honor the Capitol police officers who violently defended the Capitol building that day. And Mike Johnson, the speaker, refuses to install it. So I think it's a story that the media should continue to cover because there's so much knowledge that needs to be imparted to the American public.
Yeah, so it's not lazy journalism. It's responsible journalism by covering this anniversary as a reminder to how democracy can be lost.
Right. So I love CBS News. I grew up watching Walter Cronkite and Dan Rather. So I was watching with some trepidation as the new anchor, Tony DeCoppel, began his stint as the anchor of the news. Anybody else get a chance to watch? Get any sense?
Well, it was early. He came on Saturday, right?
Yeah, because of what was happening.
Happening in Venezuela, yeah.
You know, and a lot of criticism even today continuing for Barry Weiss, the new head of CBS News, for the fact that she pulled controversially pulled the segment on the treatment of prisoners at a Venezuelan camp or prison. And can I just say that I was stunned when DeCoppel ended one of the network's evening newscasts this week with a salute to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The segment, went through all of the things, all the new duties he has, the titles and responsibilities. And he ended by saying, whatever you think of his politics, you've got to admit it's an impressive resume.
And after all that's happened over there with 60 Minutes and Barry Weiss and the lawsuit and all that, How could you not interpret that as, I'm being nice to the people who control me?
Walter was spinning really quickly in his grave. And Dan Rather, God bless him, is still above ground.
He's got some witty phrase for it, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's really disgraceful. So he did the Rubio syncopant. Oh, it's a guy from Florida. And he also was criticized, I think rightly, for his soft peddling of the January 6th anniversary.
Exactly, yeah. Can we take a moment to reflect on the passing of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
Oh, my goodness.
The private nonprofit corporation established by Congress through the Public Broadcasting Act of 67, it officially dissolved this week because...
They voted themselves out.
Yeah, you know, it takes a little bit of oomph to do that. They did that, they said, in part because Congress had rescinded all of its funding after many, many years of political attacks, and they said it made it impossible for them to continue to operate. Of course, they didn't have any money. That also makes it difficult. This is important because about 70% of the money was distributed directly to over 1,500 locally owned public radio and television stations.
Including this one.
And delivered educational programs like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Sesame Street, which some of that programming is available on HBO if you happen to be able to afford HBO.
Yeah, right.
So what does this mean to WAMC?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that people should understand is this is a sort of final gasp, that the money had already been rescinded. So they're doing this now. But it really, the status quo remains. WAMC is a larger public media organization. We're a network. And as we've told our listeners, when we first learned about the money being taken away, we are not going to be as hurt as bad as these rural, smaller public stations, which you and Rex and Barbara have been talking about since the announcement of the money going away. And that's the real issue. Will we survive here? Yes, I believe we will. And we're about to go into a fund drive in February. We already have over $300,000 in our lockbox. So that's a good sign. Just because 2% of the American public gives to public broadcasting doesn't mean that we can't survive on that. People just have to know. So we have to remind them now. And as you and Barbara pointed out to me, WAMC needs to remind people, don't worry by this announcement. We're still here. You can help. And like I say, we're large enough that we can sustain the blow. But it's these other smaller stations around this country that really need our help, because they will lose programs, they will lose personnel, and in some cases, they'll drop off the air altogether.
Right, and they're an important source of, you know, basic information, like in Alaska about fishing reports or how the tides are coming in the Midwest about, you know, the crop reports or what's happening.
Just the weather forecast, yeah. In some ways, you know, you don't want to walk out your door and slip down the stairs like we could have this week.
Yes, and some of these areas do not have the advantage of having great internet systems. So that over-the-air broadcast means a great deal to them. And a lot of these radio stations are in areas that are primarily dominated by people who support Donald Trump, the president. The
yeah, get a premium, too, at the same time. You know, get your hat and your crank radio and whatever you need. You know, that's one of the ideas that came out of editor and publisher this week, this guy talking about, can newsrooms think like retailers? Why journalism's future might include a storefront. And they cite the Wall Street Journal Wine Club that they have, and another thing out of Chicago. I forget what it is. But what about that? Can we get any brand products from the Saratogian, Barbara?
The news does make me want to drink.
did the Saratogian ever think about a Saratogian water or a Saratogian?
So we had a few things that they would be premiums if you had a subscription to the print product back in the day.
A tote bag, perhaps?
There was like a pink sheet cap maybe, or a coffee mug, that kind of thing. But it wasn't done actively.
And in fact, if a newsroom raises this idea, typically it's up to the newsroom to implement it, and we have too much other work to do. But, you know, and like selling nice versions of your A1, if someone makes A1, they might be willing to pay $50 for a nice glossy image.
Yes, we used to have a part-time promotion person.
You mean
person.
The front page, Judy. Make sure not the steak sauce.
Right, they'd send out an image of the front page, and you can get a framed image of the front page and your accomplishment. That was a good
idea. Or some great news story that you want to have framed.
Yeah, I mean, those are one of the things that align with your mission in some respects, but it's not selling wine or beef jerky. And newspapers are trying a lot of things, but these are the kinds of things that have been tried in the past, especially as premiums.
I love my crank radio.
Well, what do you think out there? Media at WAMC.org. Let us have it. We can take it.
Yeah, nobody ever writes to us. What's that?
Well, they do. They just contemplate a lot. They move on to the next week's show, and then, you know, it's a whole nother thing.
So if you mix Rex, let us know. We'll be back next week, most of us anyway. So it's been the Media Project. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Barb. Thanks to Dave Agostina. We'll do this again next week with even more fascinating media news.
Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Judy Patrick, former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Upon a living stage now, newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.